broadcasting from Melbourne, Victoria. You're listening to the Investor Exchange. Tune in each week and listen to the guys from United Global Capital discuss the topics that matter the most to your finances. Each episode will help you separate the noise from what really matters, giving you timely and actionable information you can use. We'll cover areas related to financial markets, property, politics, personal finance, and the economy. Now, here's your host, Stephanie Sumner.
And a very good morning and welcome to the guys in the studio.
Hey.
Hello, Steph.
Good morning. I think it's been one big, massive week. I don't know about you guys, but I am so glad we're at the end of it.
Yeah. Footy's back. Got to get through today.
Absolutely.
And footy's back.
Footy's sort of.
Yeah, what are you talking about?
Well, the practice matches started last night.
Oh, Marsh Cup, as they call it.
Marsh Cup, yep.
Wow.
I can't believe we're already back.
With no incentive to do anything because there's no prize or award for it.
Swamp Cup.
Swamp, yeah. Swampy.
Women's footy's been on for 2 weeks now.
Well, of course, very true. And I have been watching a bit of it, actually. I've been getting into the Collingwood. Collingwood's on a tear. Undefeated.
Two matches.
I think they beat, who did they beat?
Carlton.
In their first game.
Oh, that's right.
Probably flogged West Coast. Yeah. I bet they did. Yeah, West Coast. Welcome to their first season in the women's footy.
Not only that, we've already...
Carlton.
And we've beaten last year's total win record. We had one win for the season last year in the females.
Yeah.
Yep. This year they've already had
two. You've been following it with your daughter too, haven't you?
Not so much following, but I'll be going to one of the matches tomorrow.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, I'll be seeing Western Bulldogs versus Carlton up at Witten Oval.
And how old's Gwen?
She's just turned 5.
And she's into it.
She's been pestering me all through last season, which is when she first could sort of follow a game of football.
She's doing better than I am. I can't even follow it.
Yeah, not very well. She just loves the cheering and the waving of flags.
Yeah.
Oh, that'd be exciting.
But she's been asking me all through last season, where do the women play?
Yeah.
And so I'm like, oh, well, they play another time of year. And then she's been bugging me all over the summer.
It's
like,
great that she started
it's
that.
It's summer. When are the women playing? When are you going to take me? Dad.
It's going to be a bonding activity for you two.
Oh, it is. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah,
and Brett, you're off to an 80th this weekend.
Oh, won't that be an event?
And it starts at 4 and ends at 5?
No, it's a lunchtime event, right. Understandably, because I'm sure they like to have their dinner early and prepare for bed.
It's not going to be a late night party.
I can't see that happening.
Is there a DJ?
Good question, actually. Yeah, probably some 19, if you're 80, so you're born 40 years ago in the 1940s. So hits from maybe the 50s
hits
and
from
60s.
The 40s.
Yeah.
Well, actually, you'd be late 30s. Oh, yeah, no, 40s. Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, 40.
Yeah, but your music could probably be in your teen years, so probably music from the 50s would be the go. Yeah.
Elvis.
Well, that's all right. Everyone likes a bit of Elvis.
Half bad, actually.
You want to come?
Yeah, it sounds great.
Might be able to sneak you in.
Perfect.
Exclusive invite.
And Joel, you're off motorbike riding?
Yes. Got the three brothers going out together tomorrow. Dave and Jack. Should be a bit of fun.
Put the wrist guards on.
Yes. And they've broken wrist again.
Yes, and stay out of the pub.
Yeah.
So, just reflecting on the week.
Well, we're all wearing black today, aren't we?
We are wearing black, but it's Melbourne and it's always cold, so you can never get too excited about anything.
Yes.
But I just wanted to reflect on Holden.
That's right. The death of...
an icon. 160
Vale Holden.
Years.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently you can get some very good discounts on Holden cars. So, if you're in the mood to buy a car,
oh, really?
Get on it.
Right, there you go. I guess those dealerships need to clear out their stock and move on to other brands.
I wonder whether or not the Holden car becomes a collector's item now. Is it worthwhile considering going out there and buying an old
one of the latest
VL Calais or something like that? You know, the old VL or VK. I had a beautiful VK Bellina as my first car.
Yeah,
lowered
really well with the ladies.
I wonder who's going to get the last Commodore off the production line. That'd be
you should have seen this car of mine. I had the VK Bellina, 5-speed manual, extractors, tinted windows, lowered, subbies.
VK was a mid-80s model, was it? VK was mid-80s it was built?
85.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was nice.
Winning.
So what are they – so General Motors will still have a presence but just not the Holden brand?
Oh, well, General Motors has a huge presence. They're one of the two big car manufacturers of the world.
I know, but here in Australia, what are their brands?
They're Australian brands.
I don't even know if they do have any brands here other than Holden, do they?
No. So they'll want to replace it with something.
Maybe. know.
They've got a portfolio of stuff, don't they?
Yeah.
Let me look that up real quick.
I don't even know.
But if they can, the Holden brand, it's you would assume that they're still going to have a network of salespeople or, you know, service centres and everything. They'll want to still sell something through there.
I actually I bought a car recently and the dealer who I bought the car through was telling me about how he is a bit of a collector, and he bought one of the 1970 Peter Brock cars that won Bathurst. He bought it for about $100,000 at the time. He reckons he could sell it for over $1 million today.
That's not a bad investment.
Yeah.
But is he like one of those people, you know, guys always think their car's worth more than what it really is?
Yeah. So. Oh, I think that one would be a collector's item. I think that would be one that would go down or go up in value quite a bit over time.
Brett, you're right. There's not really any brands that are all too recognisable to the Australian market.
No.
Ones you'd recognise from the US, so Chevrolet, Buick, GMC, Cadillac. But no, not any others that have a big presence in Australia.
Those type of cars like the Chevrolet and Cadillac, it's not really an Australian thing, is it?
No.
I wonder why that sort of never took off.
Because we had the Holden.
We had Holden.
Yeah, but, you know, just as competition with other...
Well, because General Motors owned Holden already, so they didn't want to compete with themselves.
So just Aussies just loved a Holden.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. It resonated with the market.
The one tonner.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I read the demise was where they started to miss the mark with some of the types of cars that they were importing from other countries.
Yeah, right.
So small or mid-sized cars. So the Commodore always did well. The Barina always did well. But then consumers started to change and Commodore sales started to flag.
Yep.
And some of the stuff that they brought in from overseas just wasn't – the quality wasn't up to scratch.
Yeah, right.
And the Holden SUV model, what's that called?
Oh, no, that's the Ute. I know the one. Yeah. Captiva?
Oh, yeah, that's the one.
That's a mid-size one, I think.
Okay, yep. Anyway, their SUV just
– Holden Rodeo.
No, that's the Ute.
Is it?
Yeah.
My parents-in-law have one. Anyway, the range of cars just didn't really stack up against the Hondas and the Toyotas and
Mazda
other brands.
Well, kind of sad to the end of an era. It's a sad day.
I remember going through high school where a mate of mine, his father bought a Holden Statesman, and at the time that was like the luxury car.
Bee's knees.
Yeah. I think it was a V8 under the hood.
Oh, yeah.
You know, beautiful leather seats.
It's totally shiny black.
The Statesman was the car.
Yeah.
Well, that was what the limousines were back in the day, weren't they?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, anytime someone wanted a limousine, it was always a Statesman.
And the old Ford versus Holden competition and the V8 supercars.
Yeah, well, the V8s had already diversified out of Ford and Holden a while ago.
Yeah.
But Holden is still one of the most prominent, I would say.
Yeah, it's still there. Yeah, you got Volvo now, I think.
Yeah, and Mercedes is in it.
Is it Mercedes as well?
Nissan had a presence.
True.
I'm going to interrupt now car talk and get on to our first topic for the day, because it sounds like you're having too much
just
fun
before
there.
That, I just want to touch on another piece of news, just a quick report on the First Home Loan Guarantee, which I spoke about in an earlier episode. This is where first home buyers can have a reduction on their initial costs of getting a home loan. There was 10,000 places opened by the government on the 1st of January. 6,500 of those places have an application submitted with a bank. So it's been a popular scheme.
Yep.
Mm. And the word is that it's mostly single people applying. And there is a lot of people in Sydney applying. However, because of the price caps, you can't buy a price above a certain amount.
Mm.
It's actually encouraging people to look more regional. So instead of Sydney, they might be looking at Wollongong or out
beautiful
further.
Area. Yeah.
Yeah, all sorts of things like that.
Do you know what the price cap is?
It varies by where it is.
Right.
So the price cap in Sydney is $700,000.
Still decent for a first home buyer.
Which is decent, and in the rest of New South Wales is a price cap of $450,000.
Okay.
In Melbourne, it's $600,000 is the price cap, where, you know, you're pretty much pushed to either an apartment or outer fringes. But if you're regional, then $375,000.
Right.
Which in a place like Ballarat or Bendigo would probably get you something reasonable anyway.
Was there a method in their madness to cap it at that range, or why would they sort of cap it at those numbers?
Because they don't want people buying $1 million houses as their first house.
Yeah, but they wouldn't get the lending anyway.
You want to put a cap on it, right? This is for entry level people who are
correct.
Yeah, so they don't want other people who have got the means and capacity to go, you know, it's not a free kick and say, you know, this is a party, let's go. And
you don't want a young tech upstart that's made millions suddenly getting a massive boost.
And you also don't want to be seen as encouraging first home buyers to get massive loans that not they then might default on.
Yeah, yeah, that's probably more the point.
Come on, Steph, you're in PR. Yeah. That's going to be a disaster. Yeah.
It's called spin.
Yeah, exactly.
So there's house price caps. There's also income caps. So more single people are applying than couples, maybe because single people are happy to live in smaller dwellings and have an income cap of earning $125,000 a year or less.
Okay.
Whereas couples probably want a larger dwelling at a higher purchase price, and they have a combined income cap of $200,000.
Okay. And so, can I ask, is it on apartments as well, or it just has to be a home? It can be an apartment?
It could be an apartment as well. Yep. Okay. Any first residential property.
Yeah, great. All right. Well, we might move along to the first topic. Joel, you're going to speak to us about some interesting news about the Australian stock market.
Yeah. This week, we've seen a couple of little interesting tidbits come out of the Australian market this week. The main one that came out yesterday was that CSL, the old Commonwealth Serum Laboratories, which was an old government research division that was spun off back in the 1990s, has now become the Australian Stock Exchange's largest company in terms of value on the ASX. So BHP Billiton is still the largest company in Australia when you combine the value of its Australian shares with its London-listed shares. Mm-hmm. But when you just have a look at the market capitalization of Australian companies listed on the Australian Stock Exchange, CSL briefly overtook Commonwealth Bank yesterday.
Wow.
And let's just have a look at some of the stats of CSL, because it's truly been a world beater. Now, 90% of its revenues actually come from overseas, helping it hit its new all-time high yesterday was the fact that the Australian dollar has sold off quite a fair bit. It's now trading in the 66 range versus the US dollar.
Right. So as soon as the overseas currency rates change, then the Australian dollar value goes up.
Correct. That's right. So the translation means that it's earning more Australian dollars in profit as the US dollar gets stronger. So now it listed on the ASX back in 1994, and it listed at around $2 a share. In fact, I think it was I've got it here, listed at around $2.30 a share back in 1994. Today, the share price closed at $342.75 yesterday. It hit an intraday high of $342.75. However, that $2.30 that it listed at doesn't take into account the fact that the stock split 1-for-3 back in 2007.
Oh, wow.
So in actual fact, you
60 or 70 cents.
It was 76.7 cents, the effective listing price.
What's driving it?
So that means that, well, what's driving it is that there's an insatiable demand for new plasma products, right, as they find out all these fancy ways in which blood plasma can help for medical solutions in terms of a whole range of different things. Yeah, yeah. All of them I'm not 100% sure about.
A lot of it's cancer treatments, because I was at the blood bank the other day just hearing about that.
So. is it cancer treatments,
yeah,
is it?
Yeah.
Louis, you might actually have a better understanding. Jess works at the blood bank, doesn't she?
Yeah, my wife works at the blood service, now called Lifeblood.
Yes.
And what they do is they're responsible for making sure the hospitals in Australia have enough supply of blood products, plasma products. Mm. And so CSL is one of the chief suppliers of blood and plasma products from overseas markets, where they need to purchase it from overseas.
And just an incredible call out to their company, because I think the work they do is absolutely amazing. I had no idea about that.
Yeah.
I went to interview somebody at Lifeblood the other day.
Yep.
And what a remarkable
organization. Yeah, that's right. And so CSL will, and they also do a lot of the processing, I think. So don't quote me on this, but this is my vague impression.
No, I believe that's correct.
So when a person walks into a donor center and donates blood or plasma, then certainly with plasma, it needs to be turned from the raw material into an actual medical product like a vaccine.
Right.
So cold and flu vaccines, one of the components is plasma so that it can be injected into someone and accepted into their bloodstream. And I think most of it goes towards cancer treatments.
Yeah.
And the rates of cancers are not going down in the world. Burns victims need a lot of plasma and blood. And
car accidents as well, I think.
And then a lot of other minor things.
Blood transfusions for, and those types
so
of things.
Of course, blood transfusions and things like
probably
that.
Probably not out of plasma though, but that, yeah.
Yeah, not so much plasma, but whole blood donations
for
accident victims. Pregnancies need a lot of blood. And just anything in the medical industry.
So to let's just have a look at this. So if you had have invested $10,000 in CSL on the date that it listed, that would have grown, and that's over since 1994, that would have grown to $4.43 million if you had have reinvested all of the dividends that were paid out during that period of time.
Oh my God.
$10,000 into $4.43 million today.
Amazing.
Which creates a problem if you're a private wealth advisor and you accidentally sell a client's shares who bought at the who bought at the IPO.
Capital gain.
Don't mention the wall.
We've been an investor. We had recommended CSL as an investment to our clients, and a cracking return for those long-term investors who have been in CSL, and well done to them. So just interesting, we might even give an update while I've got the stats here. So CSL today now represents 8.05% of the ASX 200's total weighting. We've got CBA at 8.03%, then BHP Billiton at 5.92%, Westpac, NAB, ANZ around the 4.6 to 4.05% of the ASX 200 total stock market value, and then you go down to Woolworths, Wesfarmers, Macquarie, Telstra, they're all in the twos. So these are the top 10 largest companies on the ASX today, with CSL briefly beating CBA yesterday.
And Joel, do you have any stats on CSL's performance since they listed in 94 versus CBA's performance since they listed in 91?
I actually don't, no. But we might do that. We might check in. I'll run those numbers
It's an interesting
for next week's podcast.
I know that CBA listed in 1991 at an initial price of $5.40 and is now worth $87.
Yes.
So that by itself is nowhere near the magnitude of CSL's growth,
yes,
especially with the stock splits taken into account, but I don't know the dividend history.
Yeah.
So you might need to look at an investor who's reinvested their dividends.
Well, that's a key difference between the two stocks. So Australia, so Commonwealth Bank make all of their profits pretty much from the Australian economy. So they're able to pay out much larger fully franked dividends. And being in a very mature industry these days, they're typically paying out 70 to 80% of their net profits as a dividend back to shareholders. So the vast majority of the returns from CBA shareholders have come in the form of dividends, particularly over the last 5 years, where its share price hasn't really done anything. CSL, though, because it earns 90% of its revenues from overseas, doesn't pay a fully franked dividend. In fact, I don't even think it's franked altogether. And the dividend's very low. Instead, what they decide to do is buy back shares as a way of returning capital to shareholders rather than paying out dividends.
Yeah. You look at the future of each of those, Commonwealth Bank for future price and earnings versus CSL. You got to look at CSL being the growth stock.
Absolutely.
With much more capacity for growth than Commonwealth Bank.
Absolutely. Yep.
So we're going to throw to a quick break and we'll be back after this message.
Are you concerned about your finances? Maybe you're not sure if you'll have enough money to retire on. Or maybe you've received a redundancy, inheritance, or even a significant promotion, or perhaps a life-changing medical diagnosis. Regardless of your concern or financial position, United Global Capital's advisors are experts in the areas of strategic financial planning, taxation, superannuation and self-managed superannuation funds, risk management, estate planning, and investments. Don't let fate dictate your financial future. Take control today and contact United Global Capital for a no-cost, no-obligation financial strategy consultation. Simply call 03-8657-7640 or email info@ugc.net.au and book your appointment today.
Okay, welcome back. We're now going to speak to Brett about the potential catalyst for short-term growth in real estate.
Yeah, I looked at an article the other day and it got me thinking about how much these sorts of things could impact property prices, and it usually seems to be short-term. So the catalyst I'm talking about is major events such as the Olympics, maybe Commonwealth Games, World Yep. Cup, things Mm-hmm. like that. Do they actually impact property prices and in what way?
Yeah, because there's a lot of conjecture around that. Hmm. And a lot of people have tried to make inference that it does and that they've bought properties off the back of that.
Yes.
What are the stats? I want to hear this.
Well, the reason I looked at it is because Brisbane are actually preparing a bid for the Olympic Games in 2032. Wow. So a long way out. Yeah. So when I say a short-term catalyst, obviously we're thinking long-term here. Mm. But I guess the impact is does hosting the Olympic Games deliver a boost in property prices shortly after or during? So to look at why Brisbane believe they want to host the Commonwealth or the Olympic Games, so the cost for running the Games is approximately $4.5 billion. So it's a big investment.
Wow.
But out of that, they say it's offset significantly at no cost to the state because the International Olympic Committee fund $2.5 billion of that. And then there's sponsorship and ticket sales revenue.
Right.
So the boost to the economy, they believe, is going to be around $36 billion in economical outcomes. So you look at it and go, okay, spend four and a half, which is really net only two if you get this other funding, to generate a 36 and a maybe even $36.5 billion gain. Well, of course you do that. And a lot of that they say is $8.6 billion in increased export opportunities, economic benefits of $7.4 that I won't go into detail, and $20.2 billion in international tourist spending. So it does make sense that that the area suddenly does become more attractive because obviously there's a significant amount of investment going in, so infrastructure improves, venues are cleaned up, there's new areas that are being developed that probably weren't, because you know the Olympic Games, if we focus on that one in particular, that's a major event that doesn't focus in just one location. They have to have rowing, sailing, soccer, all of these sports. So they have more than one venue and they generally spread it across the whole metropolitan area.
Mm.
So it can impact, a wide variety of parts of the city. Now, the results that I've got at hand, and I guess the one that's closely linked to us is probably Sydney, because obviously that was the last Australian city to host the Olympics.
Yep.
And that was back in 2000. And the data shows that there was an increase in property prices more than what the long-term historical growth rate had been after the Olympics were held.
Right.
But part of the report I read sort of states, well, it's hard to know whether it was the Olympics or whether there are other factors, because obviously property moves in cycles anyway.
Yeah.
So we had to look beyond Sydney and say, well, what happens in other parts of the world? Does it impact? And then we started to look at the World Cup, which is probably the next biggest major event in the world.
Sure.
And therefore, we had to look at Russia, obviously Rio, and all of the data I'm seeing is showing that there is definitely an increase in property prices immediately following that. Hence the reason I sort of said there's a catalyst for short-term growth.
In the lead-up or following?
No, following.
Following, okay.
Following.
Maybe everyone's drunk and had too many drinks. They're like, yeah, let's buy it.
Well, a lot of
with
it is...
new gold medals.
Well, that sentiment is kind of what causes it, because for a 2 to 3 week period, you're in the public eye globally.
Mm. Yeah.
And so therefore, you're suddenly becoming on the radar of a lot of tourism.
Yeah.
And with tourism obviously comes a lot of jobs.
Yes.
And then with jobs becomes a lot of demand for housing.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the short-term knock-on effect. So if Brisbane do get the Olympic Games in 2032, and you hear that, I would say you'd want to be in there maybe 4 or 5 years early.
And I would say Brisbane's like... holds a special spot in my heart. And I think Brisbane is a city that is just on the brink.
It is. If we think long term too, Brisbane's got so much going on and so much happening, and the climate's obviously nicer than the southern states.
Yeah.
That if it does get these Olympic Games, that could be the one thing that sort of helps it to maybe bridge the gap between Sydney and Melbourne, because it's always had about a 20% to 30% discount.
I don't think that's going to last much longer.
No, and this could be the thing that helps close that gap.
Yeah.
The one last thing I thought was interesting though is they say that based on all of their analysis, It's the cities that are typically smaller in scale that have the biggest impact on property growth. So the likes of a Sydney, which is already a well-established city, yeah, probably didn't have as much of an impact because there was already so much infrastructure and it already has so much going for it. Mm. Whereas if you took the Olympics to a smaller city, because they're investing so much to host it, mm, it tends to have a bigger impact because, yeah, you know, it increases the city's value overall, yeah, by so much. So that's where I think Brisbane could really benefit. So yeah, I'd be excited if it gets, if it does get the 2032 Olympics, I'd be pretty bullish on investing there.
I agree with, yeah, you.
Yeah, for, yeah, sure. And so much of that investment in preparing for an event like that goes into the infrastructure of just, mm, handling, yeah, the volume of people in an efficient way.
Yep.
Which once the event is over, you've, there, got a much better transport, yep, system.
Absolutely.
Much better airport entry, well, and exit,
they've
system.
They've already got a fabulous airport.
Well, yeah, they do, because, yeah, they just had the 2018 Commonwealth Games, yeah, where, yes, they, correct, prepared for, yep, all of this. That's, so, yep, if they're successful in getting the Olympic Games, what, 12, mm, 14 years later?
Yeah.
It's just a continuation of that.
Mm. Yeah.
And they'd probably repurpose a lot of the facilities, absolutely, from 2018.
Yeah.
So, actually, smart move.
I had a cab driver take me out to Brisbane Airport, and he said to me, he's watched, you know, driving various people around, that there's so many big businesses now having their conferences in Brisbane. Mm-hmm. And he said he thinks that's such a sign when you start to see really, really large companies, mm, decide to host, you know, a conference there from all over the world. He, yeah, said that's, yeah, a real growth,
yeah,
you know, possibility for Brisbane.
Yeah,
it's,
yeah,
kicking along. So,
well, that's
we've
straight
got to move
straight, yeah, straight out of the Las Vegas, yes, playbook, isn't it?
Yep.
To have all the conferences there, yeah,
get, mm, on the radar.
It's a destination.
Vegas, yep.
So it really is Bris Vegas.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, I think Brisbane as a city, with all of the stuff that's going on, even independent of the Olympics, it's primed to really stamp itself as a global city.
Yeah, I'm with you there.
Yeah.
All right, well, we're going to throw to another quick break and we'll be back after this message.
Want to learn the strategies that have achieved returns more than double the return of the average superannuation fund? Each day, clients of United Global Capital are using strategies and tactics that were once thought the domain of the professional investor or the super rich. Book your seat at UGC's Financial Fast Track Seminars, where you'll learn the science behind selecting high-performance stocks and real estate, how you can participate in advanced strategies like property development, short selling, and international investments, as well as how to protect your wealth against major adverse market events. To secure your seat, simply go to ugc.net.au/events and select the seminar that suits your needs. Seats are limited, so book your spot now.
Hey, welcome back. We're now going to speak to Louis. So you're going to be continuing today with your topic on personal effectiveness.
Absolutely. I've been talking for a couple of weeks now on things that you can do to look at the tasks that you're doing day to day and assess, do a bit of reflection on whether that's working for you or not. So two episodes ago, I talked about writing out all the tasks that you do in your work and then flagging whether each of those tasks is actually taking you towards your goals or away from your goals.
Mm.
And that's a way to reflect on, well, should I keep doing this or should I try and delegate this to someone else or should I speak to a manager about just not doing it at all or getting it off my plate? And another thing, another way to cut your tasks into different categories is to look at the things that you're doing on a daily basis and flag whether each task is a transactional task or a transformational task. Transactional task meaning just day-to-day and getting through the work, but a transformational task being game-changing. And why am I going into this? Well, if you can be better at your job, well, then you're more likely to get promotions, or if you're a business owner, you're more likely to get the gains and wins from it and be better at business with more profits. So it leads to more income in future. It, however, requires you to know your goals in the future in order to do this effectively, because how do you know if you're moving in the right direction if you don't know what your goals are?
Mm.
Now, the reason why I started with going through your current tasks, though, is not everyone is all that good at goal setting. Because with goal setting, you've got to be in the right environment, got to be in the right headspace, and you have to be future-looking.
Yep.
And not everyone is necessarily good at that frame of mind. There's actually three frames of minds that need to come together to really assess personal effectiveness and productivity and where you're heading in life. So the tasks I've mentioned the last 2 weeks are reflecting on your present activity. So what's happening in the present moment? Goal setting is what do I want to happen in the future? So it's a different headspace. And there is one more way of thinking to come into it, which is reflecting on the past. Mm. So how's my last year been? What did I do last year versus what I'm going to do this year? And what have I done in the last 5 years that's got me to where I am today?
Yeah.
And if anyone has a friend who's run a triathlon with swimming and cycling and running, they will say that everyone is naturally good at one of those things and pretty good at another one, and they're shit ass at the third one.
Yeah.
So if someone's a good runner naturally, they're a pretty good cyclist, but they're a terrible swimmer.
Yeah.
Or they're a great swimmer naturally and they have to work on the other one or two particularly when they first start out and with their training. Same thing with these three elements. People are going to find that they're naturally good at one of these, either past, present, or future. They're okay at the other one, but they struggle with the third one. So it's a cycle of bringing these three elements together, because you can't set goals for the future if you haven't really reflected on the past and you haven't looked at your present moment.
But how often do you think you should be doing something like this?
Oh, as often as you can. But realistically, it does take a lot of time and mental energy and putting yourself in the right environment. So if you can actually take yourself away for a half day, that's the kind of space that you need to switch off everything else. Go to a completely different environment, like a beach somewhere or a cafe where you're not at work, you're not at home and free of distractions.
So you wouldn't say getting someone, I mean, getting somebody professional to sort of help guide you through the process, is that sort of worthwhile for people?
Absolutely.
Because I know for myself, you're so busy in the week, reflecting on the past and sort of looking at where you are at the moment is just gets lost in what to do.
Yeah.
And sometimes when you get home, you think, well, I don't really feel like doing this now. So it always gets put back on the back burner for me.
Yeah. Yep. Well, I used to run goal setting workshops.
Right. Have to come and attend one of yours.
Well, I don't do it anymore, but there's plenty of people that do. I can recommend some for you, actually, if you'd like. I'll take that offline. And anyone else? In fact, one of our past guests, Nikki Smith, runs a goal setting workshop. And she actually starts it with a yoga session.
Oh, cool.
Which is lovely, really, to set your relaxed headspace. But it's the three elements that need to come together, and you can't have one without the other. And so you might actually need to do it over a few sessions. So the reason I've started with focusing on your present task is that might just suit some people better than others. I've talked about goal setting in previous episodes a long time ago, and I'll go through it again in the episodes to come. But I want to look at your present tasks, because that's a really good starting point for people who are naturally good at focusing on the present moment. So go through your task list, do those things, and then there is one more way to reflect on your present tasks. And that is to look through what do you do in an average day or an average week, and flag which are the tasks that you do that you actually enjoy. What are the ones that that actually give you energy?
Weekends?
Versus the ones that
football
versus the ones that take away energy.
Drinking.
Pub.
All of those things, of course. Well, drinking until the next day, it takes energy away.
That's because you don't drink enough.
Just start drinking again.
Just don't stop.
Perfect solution. But actually, I know you're joking about it, but there are surprises in there, because I tell you, I could run Excel spreadsheets all day long. I just love the numbers and the number crunching.
Yep.
If you put me in front of a computer and give me a whole day of let's do some formulas and analyze
some
data,
modeling.
I could do that from 9 until 5, and then I'd say, I'm working late tonight.
Yeah.
Going through to 9.
Yeah.
Because it's just one of those tasks that is, it suits my natural talents and my skills that I've learned over the last decades.
Yeah.
It's a task that gives me energy.
God, that's my worst nightmare.
And it's other people's worst nightmares. That's right. So everyone is a little bit different.
Yeah.
So flag those tasks that actually give you energy, because what suits me doesn't suit you. And if you identify, nut spreadsheets, I'm shit ass, and then you actually take that to the people around you, then you'll have someone else in your team who says, oh, I wish I could do more spreadsheets. And you're like, are you fucking insane? But for them, it's awesome. And maybe you can switch tasks. Yeah. And then between the two of you, then your team is more efficient and you're working to each other's strengths. So
I understand that joy of spreadsheets, I got to say, Lewis.
Yes.
I do understand that.
I can relate.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, it's nothing.
Oh, well, we all look at numbers a lot, yeah, and we know how much they impact.
I'm
what
on the
we're
creative
doing.
Side. That's just yeah. that's just not. It doesn't even.
But, yeah. But when you can create a financial model that only requires a couple of little inputs, and all of a sudden you get all of these yeah. beautiful outcomes that yeah. just work.
Yeah.
It's
God, what
it's a beautiful thing.
It's a beautiful thing. It is a beautiful thing.
It is. So, okay, us three guys, we're on the same page with that.
Yeah,
there's something wrong with this. But everyone has
and we've got
experience.
Recent experience.
Yeah, yeah. So other people, they'll be great in an environment where it's all people. People this, people that, people this. Let me have conversations for 12 hours a day and I'll still be talking into the evening. Like, fill up my diary with meetings and appointments and phone calls. And then I'm going to go out to dinner with some mates at the end of the day because I just haven't done enough talking.
Joe would say I'm like that. He'd tell me to shut up. He said, you're still talking at midnight.
So flag those ones that are in your task list that give you energy. But there's a couple of other things, inspiration and pride. So in your task list, what are the things that are inspiring you?
Yeah, that's a good one.
In your day right now, and what are the things that make you proud? Proud of the outcome or proud of the achievement at the end of it. So that's the third way to review what is on your plate right now in the present moment in your occupation. So are these tasks taking you towards your goals or away from your goals? Are they transactional tasks or transformational tasks that are changing the game? And do they give you energy or do they drain your energy? Do they give you inspiration or drain your inspiration away? And do they make you proud? Or do they bum you out?
Yeah, good advice. Certainly something I've got to do myself, so I'll have to get onto that and not procrastinate. All right, well, look, we're going to throw to our last segment for the day. Everyone's favourite, you can't be serious. I'm sure you boys have one for me. Who wants to start? Let's just not keep it too dirty.
No.
Oh, this one's pretty shame. Clean.
It's clean? Okay, yeah, well, we'll start with you then.
Dirty in terms of actual dirt, but, okay, that's but clean. You remember the old mixtape? The cassette tape.
Yeah.
Sitting down at your radio and waiting for your song to come on. You
and
might
you
even
hit record.
Yeah. You might have even phoned the radio station.
Yes.
And you sit with your finger on the button for 45
or
minutes and just waiting for the DJ
over the top
to.
Of it.
Yeah.
Used to hang out for the top 40 and just wait for my songs.
Anyway, so 25 years ago, someone lost their beloved mixtape when they were a teenager on a holiday from the UK to Spain. She lost it walking on a beach. I don't know how that happens, but anyway, it must have fallen out of her pocket or something. She lost it and it was gone. Unbeknownst to her, it washed into the sea and it washed up on a beach of a completely different country to be picked up by a collector, some kind of artist who was putting together an art collection of plastics and not waste, but sort of artifacts.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Picked up this cassette tape. And it's on display in a museum in Stockholm, an exhibition. Now, the lady who lost the mixtape 25 years ago is on a holiday to Stockholm. Goes to the museum and says,
that's my tape.
That's my mixtape.
You're joking. Yeah. Wow. You cannot be serious.
I'm sure it was all wiped of its content on there.
It worked.
Yeah.
Well, article says it still plays.
That is crazy.
Wow. That is crazy. Yeah.
Wow. Madness.
I'm going to bring us back to our normal level then.
Yeah.
So, Steph, you said you wanted something clean. Well, this is a combination of dirty and clean, and it's actually quite shocking.
Of course it is.
So there's a bathroom company called QS Suppliers. I heard this on the radio, and I found the actual story here. They conducted a study and asked 1,000 people from America and the UK about their secret bathroom shenanigans. You ready for this?
Go for it.
Okay, so this one, 68% of men and 56% of women admitted they pee in the shower. not so good. This one was an interesting 51% of men and 28% of women actually admitted they masturbate in the shower.
Oh, wow.
This is the one I couldn't believe. The study revealed that 1 in 30 people actually poo in the shower.
No.
What? Oh, no. What? No bullshit.
Sorry, I call
1 in 30.
Oh, I call bullshit.
That wow, well, that's
no, Joel, it's actually called shower shit.
Well, for those first stats, I was looking around the table because there's four of us in this room.
Yeah. I wasn't going to go around the table and ask.
I have to think outside the room, Louis. We're not
I need
in
to
this.
Think outside the room, but I mean, I know more than 30 people.
Yeah.
That means like, you know, three or four of people that I interact with regularly.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the interesting part is, I don't know about, I mean, my company has lots of toilets in there, and I've seen some certain things in there that you think, well, if that really happens out there.
Steph, that's the last part of this article here. To make matters worse, the people who admitted this said they do this in work showers.
Yes. Not in showers.
Communal ones where others are.
Yeah.
Toilets, I'm not so keen on using ours here at the office anymore.
No, shit shower. Just take some Dettol.
Yeah. Good point.
Well, we've just had the Democratic nomination debate last night. We had Mayor Michael Bloomberg, former New York mayor, participate in this debate for the first time. Now, he has taken an absolute battering last night. So his odds of actually winning have dropped from 25% down to 20%. And Bernie Sanders is now the raging favorite with about a 50% chance of winning the Democratic nominee. So good, in fact, are Bernie's chances that we are now seeing a potential showdown between crony capitalism and socialism, to the point that Bernie's supporters are now creating placards that say, "Make socialism great again."
Oh, God. Wow.
The only problem is that I don't believe socialism was ever great.
Yeah. Are you serious? That's a great point.
Wow.
Yeah.
There you go.
Wow, extreme.
Well, another week down, guys. Have a fabulous weekend this weekend, and I hope it's a really good one, and stay out of the rain because I don't think it's going to be that nice.
Fair call.
Okay. I think it will be nice.
Oh, really? Well, any weekend's nice, let's be honest.
Yeah.
Come on, Steph. We live in Melbourne. You've got to be across the forecast.
It is what you make it, hey?
Just wear dark colours and be in mourning all the time.
Black and white always go good.
Yeah,
always on weekends.
And always pack your umbrella.
Yeah. Or just move to Brisbane.
Good point.
Anyway, see you next week.
Thank you. Bye-bye.